Stella and Rafe had scheduled a meeting to discuss the manufacture of the new Ansibles. The Nexus government wanted them badly enough to pay a premium for the right to have them made on Nexus. That business done, Rafe had mentioned that he'd met Kai briefly. Stella stiffened at once and pounced.
You let her alone.
I'm not doing anything.
No? You're certainly exuding interest in that direction. And she doesn't need to be hurt again.
Rafe felt a surge of irrational anger.
Who hurt her? You mentioned that once before.
It's none of your business. It happened while she was in the academy, or rather, after she was kicked out.
Rafe sat very still, refraining from saying that, though it was none of his business, Stella seemed ready to share the gossip.
I don't know much about the man. A fellow cadet, I know that much. I heard her father telling my father about it. He approved, I think. Family not as wealthy as ours, but respectable. Ranked very high, like Kai. Hal, I think his name was. I don't remember the rest of it. My father said he might be after Kai for her money, but her father said not. Am I boring you, Rafe?
No, but you said it wasn't my business.
I saw the letter. She forgot, left it behind in the ship after she transferred to Osmond's. As a breakup letter, it was about as nasty as you can imagine. Clearly distancing himself from whatever trouble she was in. Insulting. Even sent her back her class ring all mutilated.
Stella quoted a few of the juicier phrases.
I kept it. In case she ever remembers, she left it there and wants it.
Stupid young twit.
Rafe could imagine the depth of pain that would cause a woman like Kai. His knuckles ached to meet the fellow's face.
Yes. Scared, too, I think. Kai stirred up a political storm, you see, just trying to do a good deed. But my point is, Rafe, that she's been hurt. And she doesn't need your kind of man upsetting her.
I would never...
Stella held up her hand.
Rafe, even granting that you may have changed enough to take over at ISC and act the part of a respectable corporate executive, I know you too well. You might not intend to hurt her, but you would.
Because?
Because you're not serious about her.
Stella held up her hand again, though he had said nothing.
You have never been serious about anyone, though I admit you now seem to be serious about ISC. And your own family, perhaps. But you're not serious about Kai. I don't see you giving up what you have now, ISC, your family, to court and marry her and be with her for the rest of your life and hers. Can you tell me that's what you're thinking?
He was not thinking. He was feeling. And what he felt was outside his experience and his expectation.
I love her.
You think you love her. But if you do, it's as a little sister.
No. I have a little sister. A little sister I care for and protect. What I feel for Kai is not that.
He looked past Stella at the Vata Transport logo on the wall behind her, then met her eyes again.
It's up to me and to Kai herself, Stella, what we do. Not you.
I was afraid you'd start sounding like Toby and his girlfriend. Rafe, you're too old for that nonsense. You have responsibilities, as have I. Kai has responsibilities, and if she's distracted by you or anyone else, we may all be lost. You cannot, you must not distract her.
I thought of that. I did. It's why I didn't tell her anything. But the war will be over, one way or the other.
You're not right for her, Rafe. She needs someone with the same interests, the same expertise. She's not ever going to be a corporate wife.
That's her decision.
Stella just looked at him.
I know. She's not... But I don't want her to be... To be like my mother or anything. I do care. I do love her.
Then let her alone. I know you, Rafe, remember? Not just that time we had, but the background I did on you for Aunt Grace.
I am capable of change.
Maybe. And you aren't the same as you were the last time I saw you, I'll give you that. But you still aren't what she needs, not after that Hal fellow.
I won't hurt her that way.
She doesn't need to be hurt anyway.
I'm not going to.
Well, see that you don't. Because I'll be watching.
She was watching. The Nexus government was watching. His father and his father's old friends in ISC were watching. All like vultures perched on a cliff, eyeing a lame wild sheep limping slowly along below, waiting for it to fall, hoping it would fall. Like Parmina in that way, in wanting him to prove how base, how faithless, how incapable he was. Rafe slid into his CEO persona as easily as into a well-tailored jacket and met Stella's gaze with bland equanimity.
I'm sure you're right.
Stella gave him another suspicious look, which he met with all armor on. She could not hurt him. She could not stop him. Nobody could, except Kai. And if, for reasons even he had to admit were, for the time being, operable, he could not have Kai, nothing could stop him from the pursuit of the man who had hurt Kai. Hal. He knew better than to ask Stella for the rest of the man's name, but someone he knew would know someone who knew or could find out. Presumably, he had graduated from the academy. Presumably, he was, or had been, an officer in Slaughter Keys Space Force.
I'm serious.
Rafe forced himself to smile, the neutral and acceptable smile of one CEO to another.
I'm sure you are. But now, I must go, because I have to meet with the Deputy Minister of Defense, who will, I'm sure, want to know what we are doing to ensure the reliability of the system Ansel's here.
If she weren't my cousin and an orphan, I could be more sympathetic.
Rafe waved a hand, dismissing the entire topic.
Let me assure you that damaging your family is far from my mind, and that also means I'm fighting the board on behalf of Vada Enterprises.
I know. I was told that by our people here.
Stella glanced at the clock.
Don't be late for your meeting. I'll see you at the dinner tonight.
Kai had not realized how many uniforms an admiral might need, how many public appearances must be made, at what levels of formality. She fastened the last button on her new evening dress tunic, mentally reviewing the various sensitive areas she must avoid this evening. She would meet, for the first time, the Nexus diplomats, and Rafe would be there. Well, she could handle that part. No more romantic fantasies. Everyone should be well satisfied that she was a cool, adult professional with no adolescent yearnings for the unattainable CEO of ISC. The Slaughter Key ambassador should not be a problem, nor his military attaché. Dan Pettigrew had been invited again as Bissonette's representative, and Teddy Ransom as head of Ransom's Rangers. Teddy, uninterested in meetings, had accepted the dinner invitation, and Kai decided to let the Watchers assume that's where her affections, if any, lay. Teddy, it turned out, had chosen the most flamboyant of his uniforms, white with gold, at his side a sword that Kai suspected was not merely ornamental. Gold buttons, gold braid, gold stripe on the white trousers. At least his shoes were black and had no tassels. With her white dress tunic and dark slacks, they made, she was aware, a striking pair. Especially as Teddy, enacting his romantic mindset, paid her every gallant attention. Never mind, it would divert attention from the unacceptable. Kai smiled, greeted the honorable this and the distinguished that, the names going straight into her implant, while her mind drifted.
Where's Rafe? Will he even speak to me?
Teddy went off to the drinks buffet, promising to return with one for her. Stella appeared in front of her.
You look superb.
These uniforms. You're a genius.
To her surprise, Stella flushed slightly.
I'm glad you like them. I was worried. All those times your mother told you to copy me.
Let's bury the mother-cousin thing, shall we? I needed help. You gave it. I'm grateful. I couldn't have managed this on my own, not on top of everything else. And the other officers liked the insignia design for the SDF, so again, thanks.
I did just want to say, are you having any problems with Rafe?
Kai's heart stuttered.
Problems?
Stella gave her a hard look.
You know what the problems are. Is he doing anything to make it seem like...
Like we're more than acquaintances? No, on the contrary.
I'm glad you're not involved. I didn't think you were, but besides the political problems it would cause now, he's just not the right sort for you.
As if you knew.
You've not met Captain Ransom yet, have you? Stella looked around.
No. Which one is he?
Captain Ransom! Teddy whirled, his cape swirling out.
Come meet my cousin, Stella.
Good heavens.
Stella had no chance to say more because Teddy had already produced an elaborate bow that caught everyone's attention. Nor did he spill either of the glasses he carried.
Stella, this is Captain Theodore Albert Driscoll Ransom, commander of Ransom's Rangers, who has gallantly attached himself to our force. You may recall I told you about him when I was at Adelaide. Captain Ransom, my cousin Stella Vata, currently CEO of Vata Enterprises.
Teddy was looking at Stella in the way men often did. And women, too, Kai had to admit.
My utmost admiration, Sarah Vata. May I offer you this?
He held out one glass.
Thank you.
Stella took it, whereupon he immediately seized her hand and kissed it. Kai barely avoided laughing. Stella looked dumbfounded.
And you, Admiral, here is your favorite.
Kai took the glass he offered and watched with mounting amusement as Stella reacted to Teddy Ransom's effusive praise. Kai had never seen that particular expression on Stella's face.
Excuse me, Admiral Vata.
That was one of the diplomats from Nexus. Her implant gave her his name and title.
Of course, Ser Talal.
You do not, pardon me, look like your cousin.
Kai was familiar with this one.
You're right, Ser Talal. My family were all darker. She takes after her mother's family, the Starmarcos family, who are mostly blonde. And, of course, she is beautiful.
Ah, I meant no insult.
And no insult was taken, I assure you.
If they thought Vatas were villains, she could at least be a courteous, smooth villain.
I know you must have heard that on my planet there is concern about your influence on the young Sir Dunbarger.
I have no influence. We are acquaintances merely. I'm sure he has told you the same.
Yes, but his family history. He did not have a good reputation as a young man. I would not bring up any details now, considering his present position, but it is thought that perhaps he might shade the truth.
By happenstance, we traveled on the same ship for a while, and in his capacity as an agent of ISC, he repaired some system ansibles. When we arrived here, he chose to leave the ship and return home.
Talal looked at her long and hard, then glanced aside at Teddy Ransom, still chatting with Stella.
Is that young man a friend?
Captain Ransom commands Ransom's Rangers and joined our force in Adelaide. His unit is quite effective for certain special assignments.
He is actually a ship captain. He seems so...
colorful, may be the word you're looking for.
Yes. And you find him attractive, perhaps?
Ser Talal, one cannot help noticing that he is decorative. But I am a military officer, and he is in my chain of command.
It struck many of us that quite a few Vatas survived and seemed to be involved in our affairs. You, your cousin, your aunt on Slaughter Key, and these privateers.
It bothers you that they're privateers?
Well, they're really just pirates, aren't they? Given license to attack any ship they suspect of being an enemy?
Letters of marque and reprisal specify what types of ships a privateer can lawfully engage. They are legal under the code that your government and many others signed.
Lawfully. But who's to say they stay lawful? Osman Vata didn't.
Osman was never a privateer. He was an outlaw from early on. The family threw him out.
They gave him a ship. A ship with weapons.
No, he stole the ship and armed it himself. It was an ordinary trade ship before.
You say that now.
Talal stiffened as two Cascadian government officials within earshot turned to watch, their expressions disapproving.
I'm sure you didn't mean to imply that I am less than truthful, Ser Talal.
No, not that. But you're young. You might not know.
The Slaughter Key ambassador can, I'm sure, furnish you with the data you require. Vata filed a report with law enforcement and with the insurance company when the ship was stolen.
He looked unconvinced, but the Cascadian officials had come closer. Kai had met one in that morning's first meeting.
Admiral Vata, I wanted to ask you about that very decorative young man chatting with your cousin.
Captain Ransom, of Ransom's Rangers.
A privateer company?
No. I'm not sure what you'd call them. Gentlemen adventurers, perhaps. They come from a society with a very unusual, well, to me anyway, approach to identity. Right now, Captain Ransom is exercising his romantic intelligence, he will tell you.
Romantic as in chatting up pretty women?
Romantic as in heroic. He believes in honor, gallantry, heroism, and style. Whatever you think of his present costume, he has shown himself courageous and able in combat, which is, after all, the measure of a warrior.
Talal looked at her as if she'd sprouted horns. Clearly, nothing was going to change his negative opinion.
It is said that some of our founders had a romantic streak. We always considered it something the young grew out of with experience.
The same on Slaughter Key. But on Ransom's homeworld, people apparently cycle through extremes of personality or attitude, I'm not sure which. His parents, he says, are being irrationalists. He's being a romantic, as is his friend, Captain Baskerville. It led them to seek adventure, first against pirates in their own system, and then to venture afar. We met them on Adelaide, where they asked to join us.
Well, how very interesting. But I believe they're now signaling it is time to go in. And if I recall correctly, the ambassador from your home world... Here he is.
Admiral Vata, may I take you in?
Thank you.
With considerable relief, Kai left the deputy minister to sort out the Nexus representative. From her seat far up the table, she saw Rafe being perfectly polite beside Talal, hardly looking at anyone else, and certainly not at her. He looked, in fact, like the embodiment of a stuffy, somewhat glum senior executive. Probably for the best, she told herself. She herself chatted with Ambassador Rajani about conditions back on Slaughter Key, and with the Moscow Confederation Defense Minister on her other side about the education of young officers in both systems.
They will be sorry not to claim you as a graduate.
If I'd graduated, I'd be a very junior officer on a ship somewhere.
And we would be lacking your experience. So, their loss is our gain.
Over the next few days, Kai gathered data on the privateer's combat history and repairs, and began to organize maintenance and training schedules for them. Every ship needed an Ansible installed, and crews needed training in their use. Some also required repairs, others resupply. Minor repairs and supply ate up the first 10 days of Vanguard's refit, but in addition to shepherding the Slaughter Key fleet, Kai now had Cascadian ships. Commander Dowich's contact at Moray's Tobedos Yards reported that Moray had indeed taken on a contract to build 60 to 90 of their largest design, a contract made 2 years before.
It got them out of a depression. They're delighted. There was an upfront payment another a year ago when they were on schedule with the job, and they expect to deliver the first ships in about 40 days.
How far away is Moray, and did you warn them?
I let the minister do that, government to government. But it's going to be tight, if that is indeed the target. Now, we're pushing flat out on your ship, Admiral, but you won't have time for practice runs. Moray's a solid 20-day run.
I'll need to talk to their defense people. I can warn them what they're up against and suggest a few tactical things to make up for what Turek can throw at them.
Now, I expect Admiral Trey will help you with that, but what if it's somewhere else?
We don't know of any other large ship yard that's gotten an order in the right time frame. Piccolo's only got one on order, and it's 8 months from completion. De Fornis doesn't have anything but light cruisers, and only four of those. I'm betting on Moray, especially as they said the government was Steparn, and we know they're anti-Humod.
Time blurred over the next days as she consulted with Moray Defense, Moscow Defense, the privateer captains, Cascadian captains. She managed only one hurried meal with Stella, in the apartment with Toby and Zori.
Rafe's gone back to Nexus. Nexus has pulled out, the idiots.
Kai ate hungrily. She hadn't had a regular meal in days, just grabbing a bite whenever she could.
I was afraid they would. That Nexus ambassador or whatever, Talal? He seemed to think I was a monster.
It's Rafe's father. That and our fathers being friends with Lou Parmina. They didn't know, but the Nexus idiots don't know that they didn't know.
Kai put that aside. Nothing she could do about another system's government. and turned to Toby.
I hear you had quite an adventure.
Toby glanced sideways at Zori.
It was, kind of.
And you, Zori. You translated all those things I sent. You must be really good at languages.
Zori looked at Toby, then down at her plate.
Only because my father was a criminal.
That doesn't matter. You aren't.
Zori flashed a glance at Stella, then looked straight at Kai.
How can you be sure? I thought I knew what my parents were, but I didn't. He was horrible all along, and I didn't see it.
Kai had only the bare-bones story from Stella, nothing to suggest the level of distress Zori was showing. Stella gave Kai a look that meant something, but she didn't know what. Then she got up and started clearing the table. When Zori offered to help, Stella told her it wasn't her turn. Nobody could have missed the obvious signals that left Kai and Zori alone. It was ridiculous. Kai had no idea why Stella would think Kai could help Zori. But she had to try something.
Tell me.
Maybe directness would work. Zori looked at her, eyes already shiny with tears.
I love Toby. But I loved my father once, and now I hate him. And I didn't understand about my mother.
Kai tried not to sigh, obviously.
Go on.
I can't tell Stella. She's been so good to me. She wants to help me. She thinks she understands because of Osman. But she doesn't. It's not the same. She never loved Osman.
Stella had misplaced trust too, Kai thought. But perhaps there was a reason having fallen for the gardener's son wouldn't work. She nodded, saying nothing.
I realized it started when I was in the kitchen at O'Keefe's. The night Toby was taken, and I had fallen on the floor, and there was this little girl.
Tears were flowing now, but Zori went on. This was a story she'd rehearsed to herself. Kai knew, everyone knew, that some marriages were unhappy, that some were even violent. But the story Zori told still shocked her. It linked in her mind with the violence done to her class ring. She wondered if Hal would have been that kind of spouse.
And I ran right to him. My mother was hurt, and I didn't even see it. I just let him hold me and pet me and feed me cookies. I liked being his favorite, and all that time he was hurting her. I believed what he said. I believed it was her fault that I was better. I feel so guilty. I am so guilty. She should never forgive me.
Have you talked to her since? Do you know she's angry with you?
No. Stella has. I can't. It's all my fault.
It's not. You were a child.
That's what Stella says, but I'm not a child now, and I still didn't see it.
Are you more afraid she'll hate you or more afraid she won't?
Kai had finally realized that her own fear of telling her parents about her reaction to killing had both components. Zori looked up, surprised.
I don't know.
Stella has her own issues with her mother. Did she tell you?
No.
You might ask her sometime. But here's what I see. You were a child. Your father used you against your mother. And you could not possibly have understood that.
I'm supposed to be smart.
So part of what you're upset about is that you weren't as smart as you thought you were?
That Kai understood. She herself had been so smug about not making the mistakes that idiot Stella made. Then she'd missed the cues that her Misnarii protege was using her and that Hal's affection was really ambition. She'd hated feeling stupid more than anything.
I guess so. I didn't think of that.
I've been fooled, and that was the worst of it for me. Stella and I grew up together, you know, and I always thought I was smarter than she was, even though I was younger. Then I went and fell for a sob story and got myself kicked out of the academy.
Really?
Really. Look, I'm not a therapist, and maybe a therapist would help you more. But I do know it's not your fault your father fooled you. By what you said, he may have used drugs as well, and possibly programming in your implant to shape your perceptions. You made the right deduction at the right time to save Toby, and you've now realized what the truth is.
See your mother. Talk to her. If she's hostile, then you have to deal with that. If she's not, you'll have a chance to rebuild your relationship. At least she's not dead.
The cookie. I did get sleepy.
Yeah, you said that. I'll bet he used treats more than once. Not a nice man, your father. Zori straightened up.
I know she wants to see me. She's asked Stella. Stella won't make me, but now... All right.
Kai reminded herself that adolescents could change moods in moments. She had. Stella had. Toby'd been the same.
Drat.
Kai pulled out her comm unit. Zori, I'm sorry. I have to leave.
That's all right. I mean, you've helped.
Stella, I have to go. Stella and Toby came out of the kitchen.
Already?
Unfortunately, yes. I'll try to call you later.
Kai noticed that Zori was murmuring something to Toby. Stella glanced that way and gave Kai a finger flick. Good.
Kai caught the shuttle over to the yard where the newly installed CCC was ready for calibration runs. Vanguard was shrouded in the vast bulk of a repair dock capable of handling a ship twice her size. Riggers were now rebuilding the hull around the inserted CCC. The interior of the ship was mostly aired up, and Kai could enter from the normal hatch. The ship looked different even on the route from the personnel hatch to the CCC. Kai had known that her former spacious cabin and office would be cut into quarters for more crew, but it felt strange to see hatches where none had been before. Where she had fought Gretna's intruders along the aft weapons deck passage, she now faced a bulkhead with a single hatch that looked much thicker than usual.
Now remember, I told you the CCC has hull-thick construction. Go on in.
Where are the connections to the ship systems?
Already covered. The brake frees are on the ship side. I can show you later if you want.
Inside, the CCC was every bit as cramped as they'd said, and smelled of freshly molded plastics and resins, machine oil, and an acrid bite from soldering just finished. Protective film still covered some of the screens and control boards. It looked too fresh, too clean, but that would not last the first 10 days' use, Kai knew. Soon there would be smudges, stains, the paths humans left behind them, wherever they worked and lived. Kai wove between the lumpy shapes of the armored stations for scan and communications and the intrusive bulk of the onboard Ansible to the command seat. It looked much like the one on Vanguard's bridge, except the shield that would close her in was opaque, a peculiar blue-gray.
I thought it would be translucent.
It will be, when you turn it on and choose that option. But it will respond to certain kinds of shock by going opaque. Doesn't matter, you still get the data. And what you're seeing there are the laminae for the displays. Go on, sit in it. I want to calibrate it for your size and weight.
Shouldn't I have my suit on?
Yep, your suit locker's by the hatch.
Kai suited up, wondering who had moved her personal suit from her former quarters, then eased into the command seat.
All right, now let your arms lie naturally on the armrests.
Dowich touched the controls of a remote. The chair seemed to squirm under Kai, gently lifting, falling, nudging.
All right, how's that?
Very comfortable.
Setting one. That's your default. Now look to the right. Good. And to the left. All right, now pretend you see something right in front of you that you want to point out. Yes, just that much movement. Now, I'm going to unlock it again. Lean back. You're tired. There's a break in the battle, and you need to relax. Shift, unkink your muscles. But you're not sleeping. Yes.
Kai leaned back, stretching her legs out a little. The seat moved, supporting her, easing her back.
Okay, I'm going to start the massage function. Now you tell me how much is too much.
In another 5 minutes, he had the seat support function set for her.
All right, now the displays. Now, I know you'll practice, but I want to take you through them first. Left hand, thumb knob. That's your translucency. Right hand, thumb knob. Lift and lower the canopy when it's not automatic. Now, if it won't open, there's a reason, so don't fight it.
Dowich waited until she nodded.
All right, now, lower the canopy.
Kai lowered it. In front of her, a dark field like space itself. She thumbed the left-hand control, and it faded until it was wholly translucent. She could see Dowich watching her.
How's the sound?
Very clear.
Good. And your scans can be chosen as the primary data from any of the stations, or as an integrated view of all of them. Now, I put a simulation in the CCC scan unit so we don't panic station security by setting off live scan this close. Now, scan controls are left hand, communications are right hand. You have armrest controls, but you can also choose point, touch, or gaze direction.
In front of her, hanging in the air, miniature scan screens came up. Kai switched from one mode to another. She could enlarge any screen. She could combine screens. In the simulation, the familiar acceleration cones, orange for approaching, blue for receding, showed ships in motion. She hunted through control hierarchies and found how to mark ship icons as enemy, unknown, friend.
How much of this can be controlled by my implant?
Well, probably all of it. We just need to get your implant and this set of subroutines melded. Now, if you find the visual background confusing, try reducing the translucency.
Kai thumbed the control again, and the canopy slowly darkened. The display seemed brighter now, and she could still see Dowitch. She continued until the displays seemed to hang in space as vast as that between stars.
All right, sounds still good?
Fine. I've never seen anything this elaborate.
The command chair is based on what they use at Moray. You've got direct feeds for communication. We're still figuring out how to connect the onboard Ansible, though. It's easy in the other ships, but here we want to tie it into the one on the bridge, but have independent use optional.
Have you asked Toby?
Your cousin's ward? No, I thought he was still supposed to be restricted.
I can spring him, and he knows everything about Ansible hookups.
Fine, but for now let's go over the safety features.
Dowitch explained the conditions under which the CCC would close automatically from the rest of the ship, and when the command seat would seal. Temperature, pressure, acceleration, atmosphere. Some of those, Kai realized, would not be met unless Vanguard blew. She was not going to think about that. Back out of the command seat's enclosure, Kai called Stella and told her they needed someone, Toby for preference, right away, to link the onboard Ansible.
And while I have you, what about Ansibles for spares and to take to Moray?
You'd have to clear that with Moscow Defense. We're putting them in as fast as we can.
Stella started explaining more than Kai wanted to hear about the difficulties involved in tooling up for a complete new product and maintaining quality control as production scaled up through set points that required unit expansion. Kai tried to listen patiently, but finally interrupted.
Bottom line, how many units can we have?
Well, I just told you. It depends on Moscow Defense.
At least there, Kai dealt with someone who didn't want to explain everything, who had answers.
Ansible units for Moray. Sure, that's been dealt with at the policy level. Moray asked for a demo model, but will purchase enough for their new-built ships and pay in ships. It's lucky your Slaughter Key contingent are privateers. They have more cargo capacity. For safety, we'd prefer to ship no more than 5 per vessel.
You're sending that many? What about technicians to install them?
Oh, there's a manual now. Standard format training materials. Anyone who can install a standard comm unit can do it. We're providing technical assistance as each is installed, and after that, each ship's communication specialist will be able to help install others at Moray. All you have to do is give the orders.
After the struggle to keep her few ships supplied, this seemed unreal. Surely it wouldn't continue. The rest of supply, food, munitions, water, cultures for environmental chambers, went almost as smoothly, but only because, Kai suspected, her newly commissioned supply division used the same tactics as they had in their privateer days. Gordon Martin on Vanguard had counterparts on all the other privateer ships and on the Cascadian ships committed to their fleet. Martin had not wanted to command supply. A Cascadian officer, Commander Michelle Moscow-Corian, held that post, and supplies poured onto the docks in what Kai considered astonishing profusion.
How are we paying for all of this?
One of Corian's bushy eyebrows rose, and a sly grin crooked the corner of his mouth.
Paying? Did you think you were supposed to pay for something?
Are you trying to give us a bad rep, Commander?
No, ma'am, never that. But when Moscow Defense tells me to be sure the ships are fully supplied, well, I'm just following orders, see? They didn't give me a budget, exactly.
A free hand, then?
Not exactly. More like, prove it's necessary. Anything doubtful, get approval for. Now, just between you and me, I might not have the same definition of doubtful that they do. And they know you're not trained by them. And over half your ships aren't ours, so we don't necessarily know what they need.
Did you ever consider privateering?
Me? My family would have had a fit. And this way, there's no question about the legality of what I'm doing.
It would be rude to suggest anything else, wouldn't it?
Yes, Admiral, it would. I'm glad you recognize that, because I would hate to see such a fine officer err in matters of professional courtesy.
I'll keep that in mind. I'm supposed to meet a Major Anson in about an hour, something about personnel transfers.
Bobby Anson? Oh, you like him. You need more crew, don't you?
Yes. She had been short of crew even before reaching Cascadia, where several more of the civilians on Shara's Gift and Vanguard had asked to leave. With need for a fleet staff and crew in the CCC, she'd had to ask Moscow Defense to help.
Yeah, you do you right. People are clamoring for a chance to be on your ship.
Zori spoke to Stella during breakfast, the day after Kai's visit.
I want to talk to my mother.
She had wakened with that thought foremost. Whatever her mother said to her, she herself had to try to make up for years of neglect.
Are you sure?
Yes. What Kai said, it's not all about me. I'm hurting her more by not seeing her. I didn't think of that. Is she at the house?
No. She's staying at Sprucewood. It's in the directory. She's been talking to her relatives, Zori, and she's had some disappointments. She wanted to move back down planet.
Where the family estate is. I don't want to. I don't want to leave Toby.
I don't think you need to worry about it. She'll tell you, I'm sure, but her family's being difficult. Something about your father and the estates.
Stella glanced at the clock.
I've got to get to the office. Feel free to invite her over here.
Zori stared at the contact number a long time before calling. Zori's mother wore a simple blue dress and no jewelry.
Zori, I don't blame you. I blame myself. I should have seen. I should have known. And then he would have hurt you. Zori, you were a tiny child. It was better as it was. I can't believe that. You were hurt. You don't want to believe that. Zori, listen to me. This was not the worst life. And you can have a better one. Maybe with Toby, maybe with someone else. You deserve it. And what about you? I should take care of you. No. I am an adult. It's my job to take care of myself. I'll be fine. You won't. What will you do? For one thing, I won't let you run my life. Zori, relax. Please. It's true that my family are angry with me right now, and they don't want me back home, back on planet. But I still have some resources. I can get by, and you'll finish school. You should move in here. Stella would let you... No, you should move in with me. Not because I want to keep you away from Toby. He is indeed a very nice boy, quite suitable. But because you and I are a family, all we have left of what we had... Yet we don't know each other all that well, and we need to. Would we go back to the house? No, never. That life is over. I've had all your things moved into storage. We can rent an apartment.
Zori didn't want to move. She wanted to stay near Toby forever. She liked Stella. But it was hard, too, living in the same apartment, and yet not ever doing any of the things they weren't supposed to do. And Stella probably wanted her to move out.
I won't force you, Zori, but I think it would help you. And me. I think so, too.
Zori reached out, and her mother was there, holding her. Stella, at the office, stared at her comm unit and bit her lip. Zori was talking to her mother. She, Stella, was not talking to her own mother. She had to. She knew she had to. The white-hot rage she'd felt when she'd first learned of her true parentage had long since died down to a sullen glow. But that still left the dilemma.
How honest can I be with a woman who wasn't honest with me?
She no longer wanted to hurt Helen, but healing the breach between them would require honesty from both of them. Stella wasn't sure Helen could stand that. She checked the time zone for Vata headquarters on Slaughter Key. Early evening now. Helen might be out to dinner, or shopping, or home. She could not let Zori outdo her in courage. She opened a circuit to the system Ansible and placed the call. As the work on Vanguard neared completion, Kai's days grew ever busier. She needed to be in at least three places at once. She wanted to get the ships that were spaceworthy into training. She had to be available for conferences with Moray and Moscow government officials, and she was sure that the Admiral's presence would speed work on Vanguard. Argelos and Pettigrew, because they had been in combat using the shipboard Ansibles, took over much of the training. Kai had daily reports and logged in by Ansible whenever she could, but she knew she needed experience in commanding from the CCC. Yet she could not spare the time to be ferried to and from the dockyard to sit in the command seat while the others worked on their assignments. Finally, Vanguard came back to Cascadia. Kai moved her gear back aboard. Her formerly spacious quarters were now the size of the captain's cabin on Gary Tobai, but she didn't care about that. She wanted to run an exercise from the CCC as soon as possible. Though Turek had not sent another broadcast, she knew his next attack could not be far away. Kai turned to her assembled captains, some on Cascadia Station and some attending by Ansible.
Those ships at Moray will be within days of completion by the time we can get there. We can't afford more than 2 days of exercises. They'll be intense. We can sleep in FTL.
There was no real resistance. In the presence of Cascadian ships and officers, the privateers had become competitive ship handlers, determined to show that privateers weren't sloppy merchanters. She passed out the updated information she had on Moray's own defense system, the basic tactics used, the contact codes they'd been given. Moray Defense used clusters, 2 maniples per cluster, a cluster per sector, scattered around the system and dependent on the system Ansible for rapid communication.
Moscow's given us the entire Sector 12 to play in. We'll rendezvous there at 1800.
Today?
It was 1400.
Today. Dismissed.
She was as exhausted as the others when she finally gave the order to form up for the jump to Moray System. But in those 2 days, she had come to feel that the 46 ships under her command were functioning as a fighting unit, even the transports. Moray's last report before they entered FTL was that construction proceeded normally and no threat showed.
A lot can happen in 20 days.
We're as ready as we can be.
Lozar Pitanji, assembler third on the second shift of number 30 dock, headed home at the end of the shift with nothing more on his mind than whether Jari, his wife, had brought home a fish for the betrothal feast. Though he would never rise above assembler third, as a devout Miznarii, he refused to consider a cranial implant, and more senior grades at Moray's Tebedos Yards required implants, he had a comfortable life, especially now that ship orders were up. Besides, he had that small but very welcome stipend from the faithful, making the betrothal feast possible. And for nothing, really. For nothing but attaching a few tiny data dots to each ship he worked on.
It is nothing harmful. It will only tell Miznarii, who have a little reader, that this ship was partly built by Miznarii. That's all. You can see for yourself.
Yes, Ahmad.
Lozar had taken the reader he was offered and passed it over the dot, and the message came up. The quotation from the book that ordered the people to use their own brains and not partake of machinery. And the words, "This vessel contains work made by the mind and hand of true humans, the faithful." So Lozar had attached many such dots to the ships he'd worked on without anyone noticing. One near the main hatch, one near the bridge. Yes, it was against the rules to attach any extraneous materials to the ship, but he didn't see what harm it could do. Even if the infidels had readers and found the dots, even if they determined who had placed them, his conscience was clear.
Hey, Lozar, wait up!
Lozar glanced back. Jerry and David, both on his shift but non-Miznarii, were almost jogging toward him. Though they were senior, thanks to their disgusting implants, he had come to consider them friends.
Didn't I hear you say your daughter's betrothal dinner was tonight?
David patted Lozar's shoulder.
Man, you can't face something like that right after work. Come on, we'll stand you around at the Rigger's Friend. At least we can do.
But Jody told me to come straight home.
Ah, wives always do. Betcha she doesn't really expect it, though. Mine never did. You're facing the in-laws, right? You need a little fortification. Jari doesn't really want you around when she's putting the final touches to the dinner. What time's it start, anyway?
20:00. Later than usual, because it's formal.
David hung an arm across Lozar's shoulders.
Then you have plenty of time. And I promise we'll see you get home in time to change and all that.
Despite David's assurance, Lozar left the Rigger's Friend so late that he had to take the shorter way back through the service corridor. Not strictly legal. And Jari glared when he came in. She was not nearly as annoyed as the substitute candy salesman at the cart parked in D-Ring, Corridor 34, on the direct route between Lozar's worksite and his apartment, the route he took almost every night. Paddy Kendallman looked at the daily statistics with half a mind on his son's school performance. He'd paid for the enhanced student module for the boy's implant, but Paul still struggled with math, and the teacher talked about special testing and learning disabilities. Lisa had been furious, blaming the teacher and Paddy alternately. If only he'd been put in the other class, if only Paddy had bought that enhanced module the year before.
Now that's odd.
He pushed aside the problem of Paul's math performance and squinted at the readout, where dispatch had flagged certain entries. On a station this size, 20 deaths in a standard day, plus or minus 3, was about right. Most were natural or accidental. The causes obvious. The very old, the sick, the accidents that will happen any time serious construction work is going on, the occasional drunken brawl or domestic dispute ending in death by intent, though not nearly the level it used to be. But the past 24 hours had produced 29 deaths, a notable bump. And here were three unexplained deaths in previously healthy men of early middle age. Not accidents, not assaults, no real reason. All sudden deaths. Dead before the medics could arrive and do anything. Heart failure.
Heart failure? In men whose last medical checkup was clean? No wonder dispatch flagged them for investigation. It all worked in the yards. Oh, it has to be a coincidence, doesn't it?
But five lines down, he saw another. A woman's sudden collapse in a public place. Death too quick for medical intervention.
How common is that?
40-year-old women didn't suddenly die from undiscovered heart disease. Not in this era. Not with mandatory health tests. And she was, or had been, an accountant in the same firm one of the men had worked for. Lisa always said he had a streak of paranoia. And right now that streak was buzzing up and down his spinal cord, raising the hair on his neck. He initialed the autopsy requests, marked them urgent, and sent them on. The dead Miznarii's family would no doubt try to prevent the autopsy, but the law was on his side.
Is this related to the alert 3 10 days ago?
Kendallman glanced at the master schedule. They'd been briefed that an attack might come when a frame of ships neared completion, and frame 6 was within days of completion. They were expecting the customer to arrive to take delivery. He looked at the list again. The dead Miznarii had worked on frame 6 and frame 5 both as assemblers. Another had worked only on frame 5. But the other dead man had been a specialist in control systems, and he had worked on frame 6. Paddy pulled up the man's record. Banamir Atanda, unmarried. No close relatives in Tobedos Yard Station. No obvious legal problems. But his financial records were peculiar. Everyone had had problems in the dearth of ship orders a few years past, but his balance had sunk faster than most. Faster than some married men with children to support.
Couldn't have been drugs. Not with his performance reviews. Women? Or gambling? One of those.
Surveillance videos in the local gambling hells showed Banamir's face at table after table. The uneasy feeling intensified. Gamblers, serious gamblers, were easy to manipulate. They always thought they had a system, but gambling led to debts, often large ones, and too often debts led to embezzling. Patty shook his head as the files opened to show a familiar pattern. Embezzling, then blackmail.
What did Banamir Atanda use to pay his gambling debts?
Vanguard dropped out of FTL flight at Moray System on schedule and in the approach vector Moray's Defense Command had requested, a low relative velocity insertion at a high angle to the ecliptic, far out on the fringes of the system, 4 light hours from the primary. Kai, in the new Combat Command Center, stared at the duplicate scan displays. She felt isolated, her familiar bridge crew replaced by specialists, some borrowed from Cascadia, on duplicate scan stations. The only familiar face was Master Sergeant Pitt, who'd asked permission to observe here. Major Douglas had elected to observe from the bridge, at Hugh Pratang's invitation. As scans cleared from down-jump turbulence, ship icons appeared, most, with wide uncertainty bars, clustered near the fourth planet and its shipyards. Until they had more information, all the icons were neutral yellow. Behind Vanguard, more and more of Kai's fleet dropped out, their 2 stealthed observation ships tucked neatly between larger vessels. Each ship reported in, and a broad V of green icons built behind her. They had kept excellent formation. Kai transmitted congratulations to all of them by shipboard ansible, then turned to the communications officer.
Report our arrival to Cascadia.
We're not getting an ansible signal, Admiral.
No system ansible at all?
Nothing. I've pinged it. We wouldn't get a reply to that within a couple of hours if the booster tech is down, but I'm thinking it's something else. I can use the shipboard.
First ID's coming up. Uh-oh. Blue Ridge is a red tag, right?
They beat us to it. Use our onboard ansible. Report that to Cascadia.
That leisurely visit with the Mackenzie commanders, that trip back to Cascadia, the time necessary to transfer ansibles from Vanguard to the other privateers, to install the CCC in Vanguard, all had given the enemy time to strike its logical target. They'd warned Moray, but a few 10 days wasn't time enough to develop a plan against a massive invasion, especially when the enemy had onboard ansibles.
If they have the ships...
All right. Steady on. We need to know more before we charge in.
Across the screen, icons flared to red. Some remained yellow. Those could be neutrals or natives or enemy not yet identified. The new military-grade battle analysis computer, a gift from Cascadia, should give them better real-time data on the flow of battle, including the location and identification of outlying ships presented in a 3D holographic display. Kai wasn't sure she trusted it. The unit had been purpose-built to work with onboard ansible data as well as conventional scan data, and they'd had so little time to test it.
Anomaly here. Mass consistent with a small ship. Could be a stealth observer.
Probably is. What are we picking up on communications channels?
We've got just 1 ansible turned to the pirate's channel set. A lot of chatter, can't understand it. Lightspeed comm will be old.
Lightspeed would be, most likely, Moray's own defense services.
Capture all we can. Put someone on it for history.
History might tell her how this had happened. She'd warned Moray Defense, before her fleet left Cascadia, to be alert for attacks. They'd said they were prepared, but they had refused to release most of their plans until she arrived. Prudent, but now another complication. She could not coordinate with them without knowing specifics. She glanced at Yamini and Douglas, tiny icons on her command chair display. They had insisted on preparing 2 battle plans for a similar situation, arriving to find the pirates either already in possession of the yards or just arrived in the system.
Recommendations?
More data.
I'd say plan C1 in 10 minutes to collect a little more data.
2 hours. We'll have a better picture.
In 2 hours, it could be over. I interpret the present ship positions as indicating combat ongoing for at least 4 hours. Already, micro-jumping into position puts us at risk of weapon tracks. As well, if they have stealthed observers as we think, the pirates now know where we are. If we sit here...
Kai nodded. Space congested rapidly as the battle progressed, filling with the lethal detritus that included ordnance, fragments of blown ships, and other structures.
C1, but 20 minutes, preceded by a 2 light-minute dispersal jump.
If any of the pirate ships weren't fully engaged in the battle, if Turek had a reserve, she needed to get her force into unpredictable motion quickly. It would make recombination more difficult, but not beyond her captain's abilities. The real problem, the one no one mentioned as the ships jumped on her order, was the possibility of jumping into the path of weapons fired hours before.
And we need to let Moray know who we are, even if they don't get the word for hours.
The enemy can pick up that transmission.
With any luck, the enemy is busy at the moment. Use Tight Beam, the Snowflower set.
The dispersal micro-jump ended. All ships reported in. Partrade, on Angel Hair, had moved closest to Tobedos Yards.
All the ships in the yard appear to be there still. I should be within 2 hours of them. I overjumped.
Fatal if he overjumped into one of their own ships. But no time now to regret the lack of training time, the lack of calibration she'd insisted on with her first little group.
Forward your scan data. Then all captains, use your new scan data to refine your micro-jump calibration. Last chance.
The data poured in. The new battle analysis computer, combined data from Angel Hair, their own stealthed observer left back near the down-jump exit, and all the other ships to produce a best guess with narrower uncertainty bars and the first movement cones. A debris field now blurred scan where the first contact had come. One Moray cluster, 10 ships, was simply gone. Others were fragmented. Without the system Ansible, they could not communicate well enough to coordinate their actions. Maniples tried to hold together within easy light-speed communication, but this made them fatter targets for the enemy.
You start a lot of them. We got 48 enemy icons at least. If half those yellows turn red, we're in for it.
We'll be in for it worse if they get those warships. Except for the Bissonette ships, he's got the same kind of ships our privateers have, and he's fought enough that they should also be showing structural problems by now.
Unless he's picked up more military ships somewhere, but yeah, he needs more.
Coming up on 20, Admiral.
Execute, then recalibrate.
It wouldn't be as good as if they'd calibrated before the battle, but it should help reduce some of the inaccuracies. Vanguard skipped and then returned to normal space. New data popped up on the screens. Now some 30 of the enemy ships hung less than a light minute from the yard, their acceleration clearly marked on the trace, while 8 were poised on the far side of the debris field.
Got voice recordings, Admiral. Moray Defense challenged an apparent official mission from the government that ordered the warships. Moray told them to halt and be inspected at an outer station. They must have thought that they might be challenged because that's when Turek's force attacked the nearest cluster. Other Moray defense clusters responded to that area, but they came in singly. Moray's lost half its on-duty clusters at this point.
Defeat in detail. And there's nothing left to defend the yard. It'll be over before the other half of their defense force realizes it started.
We have the local codes, and they have our beacon IDs. Send our ships to their cluster stations, use light-speed comm to tell them what's going on.
And tell them to do what? Their doctrine would have them support the cluster under attack. That's how the closest ones got hammered.
Tell them to stick with our ships, follow their orders, because otherwise, they're dead or useless.
Moray's yelling for help.
Tell them we're here and we'll engage shortly. Wait, what are those ships leaving the station?
17 blips, none with working beacons, had lifted from the station an hour ago in no particular formation.
Are they Moray crewed or what?
There's a problem. A lot of radio chatter, I don't understand it all. Sabotage, they think, but also, some hotheads took some ships out to fight off the invaders, only the ships aren't really commissioned.
Which is which?
Scan recognized the ships as large, some of them armed, weapons hot. If those were the enemy, half her own ships were now dispersed to offer support and communications to surviving Moray clusters. Some of those were beginning to move together, following Kai's battle plan.
8 have crew, they think. Not trained crew, though. Dockyard workers, riggers, and the like. The others are under some kind of remote control.
Kai touched her own scan controls, enlarging and shrinking, until she found the views she wanted. Estimates of the ship's velocity, acceleration, course.
Can they blow them from the station? How long ago did they undock?
They don't want to destroy them. They're saying those are brand new warships, worth a fortune.
Idiots!
They could lose not just ships, but the station, the entire system, if the enemy got away with those ships. But her force was now engaged, some of it. Those ships weren't her problem yet. Even without proper beacon IDs, they were pinned on scan. Without working weapon systems, they could be blown anytime. More important, to get Churek and his ships.